Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Hold on. You're about to meet a real force of nature. Loretta Weinberg is one hell of a committed, impassioned, devoted public servant who has served the people of New Jersey since first being elected to the State Assembly in 1992 and where she served until 2005. That year, she was elected to the State Senate and is currently Majority Leader. Loretta serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee, is the Vice Chair of the Legislative Oversight Committee, sits on the New Jersey Israel Commission, the New Jersey Historical Commission, and State Legislative Services Commission. Senator Weinberg was appointed by the Chief Justice of the New Jersey Supreme Court to an ad hoc committee investigating domestic violence and the court system. She also happens to be the first person to run as a Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor in New Jersey. A list of her legislative accomplishments include sponsoring the New Jersey Smoke-Free Air Act, which bans lighting up in public spaces and workplaces, backing legislation that required health insurance companies to pay for at least 48 hours of hospital care for new mothers and their babies, forming the Governor's Advisory Council on Adolescent Pregnancy, helping to create a landmark autism research funding bill that gives a dollar from every traffic violation to autism research. She's also been in the lead on every LGBT advancement in the state, including marriage equality, transgender equality, and sweeping anti-discrimination and anti-hate crimes laws. She's won several awards and honors and was selected by Marquee's Who's Who list of American women. Oh, one more thing. Did I mention that Senator Weinberg is a very youthful 80 years old? Well, let's meet this powerhouse. Senator Loretta Weinberg, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Sandy, thanks so much for that glowing introduction. You made me smile.
Well, I didn't make it up. It's all true. So you came to public life late in life, 57, if I'm correct. But once you did, you quickly rose through the ranks in Garden State politics from city council to the state capitol in Trenton. How, why, and did you expect this to happen?
No. You know, I often say I planned very little in my life. I came from an era when women didn't really run for office. We were the ones who did the house parties for candidates and did the mailings and did the little 3x5 blue cards before we had computers. I just came from a different era. And I had worked for so many different candidates over the years, from local office up through really President of the United States. So many candidates that ended up disappointing me one way or another. So I thought to myself at one point, it was 1990, it was time for a council election in Teaneck, New Jersey, where we have nonpartisan elections. And I thought, well, if I'm going to disappoint anybody, let it be me. And I decided I would put my toe in the water and run for office. And it was a very unsettled time, although I didn't know it when I filed for office to run for council in Teaneck, New Jersey. We filed for office in March for May election. And in April, this goes back to 1990, some years back, we had our own Minnie Ferguson. Well before Ferguson, there was a white policeman who shot an African-American young man. Yeah, the Philip Pinell issue. Shot an African-American young man, turned out to be in the back. And Teaneck, that a town that had been celebrated as a model town, integration, school integration, et cetera, erupted. So the shooting was in April, and I was elected to the council in May, just a few weeks later. And those first 2 years on the council were a very big learning curve for me. I heard from, we all heard, not just I, but all of us who were sitting as elected officials in the local municipal building, heard from people on all sides of these issues, from the ultra-right to the ultra-left. We had folks coming to our council meeting, everybody from the old Al Sharpton, I call the fat Al Sharpton before he lost all that weight, to, as I say, people, ultra-conservatives on the other side. And it was a time when I learned so much about other communities. And one of the stories that I often share with people, it was a woman in Teaneck who's a contemporary of mine, both age, economically. We both had, we each had a couple of children. She had two boys, and she, an African-American woman. And she said to me when we were having one of our conversations, now remember, this goes back to 1990, so it's some 25 years
ago.
Right,
right.
She said, I taught my sons to hold their money in their hand when they walk into a store so that they won't be accused of shoplifting.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought to myself, you know, it took me aback that I remember that so clearly 25 years later, that it would never have occurred to me that my children would be accused of shoplifting unless they were shoplifting.
Exactly.
And
no preconceived idea.
Absolutely. Such an insight into what it was like to be a middle-class African-American mother in the suburbs. We were not talking about an urban area. We were not talking about economically disadvantaged people. We were talking about people that were like me or like you.
Exactly.
And so I learned a lot those 2 years. Those first 2 years on the council.
Did you think that you were in over your head? Not politically, necessarily. I mean in terms of the work.
It was eye-opening, and we had a lot of resources. We had a wonderful clergy council in those years in Teaneck that we were able to call on. Mm-hmm. Did a lot in terms of helping people through this issue. We were able to talk to the police about community policing. We found out so many things about the police department itself that had been shortchanged. They, too, were suffering in their own way. So I think it was eye-opening. It was fascinating. And there were resources within our own community that were terrific.
So what a great thing to be able to move from talking to action. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As opposed to just lamenting and standing around wringing your hands. So
right. That's how we built the first or set aside funds for the first community center that's pretty well known in our community, a new police station because the other one was literally falling apart. Took a tour there soon after I was elected, and the police locker room always had water on the floor, so they had pallets on the floor so that they weren't constantly waiting in water in just terrible conditions in a really in a middle-class community.
Were you able to marry your work on the council with working full-time as well as being a parent?
Well,
I mean, that's a lot of balls in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a lot of balls in the air, and I always tell this to young women when I speak to them, that you can't have it all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
There is always a sacrifice, and sometimes it's different depending upon the situation. Sometimes it's your kid's Little League game. Sometimes it's some important issue that you really should be addressing because of your child's Little League game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you make these decisions as they come about. And, you know, I had this kind of ironic joke, which I still share with my adult children, that goes something like, I'm so busy building a better world for you, I don't quite have time for you right
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm,
and you'll work it out in therapy when you grow up, was always the
right,
bottom line.
Right,
and they
right.
both did, by the way.
The terms were 2-year terms on the city council.
No, 4-year.
Did a 1-4-year term?
I did 1 4-year term. It was midway of the 2-year term that I was elected to the assembly.
That you were solicited, so
yeah.
to speak. That somebody was
retired
their seat. Uh-huh.
Somebody retired because of illness. And I was solicited, the first woman to be elected from that district. And I served out my term before dual office holding was outlawed in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
so that we had many people who were on their local councils
mm-hmm.
or local county boards and in the legislature. But I will tell you, I found it a real conflict. Certainly in terms of time, and then...
You mean doing both?
Doing both.
Yes.
Correct.
And then schlepping to Trenton, which is not around the corner from Teaneck, New Jersey.
Yeah, it's an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay, so
it's not that bad. But there were times when I might have voted for something in Teaneck, but I thought of the legislature or vice versa. So I found that it was really not good to be serving.
And were you working full-time, too? Once you were elected to the assembly?
No. I had been working full-time, but I was not at that point.
At that point,
yeah.
So that you were able to breathe a little easier.
Right.
Were you ready for that? You know, did you sort of say, you know, Loretta, you can do this? Or let me rephrase that. Did you want to do this?
Yeah, I wanted to do it, and I didn't really think about whether I was ready or not.
Or what you were getting yourself into?
And I remember one of the first times that I drove to Trenton by myself, and I got so lost. And I could see the Capitol Dome, but somehow I just couldn't find the street to get there.
Right.
So I stopped. There was a policeman directing traffic. So I stopped and asked him directions to the State House, told me what way to go. And then as I drove off, knowing I had the special assembly place, thinking he must have thought, oh, there's another genius legislator. She can't even find the State House. So it felt very big, and it took me a little while to learn my way around. But you know, Sandy, I never thought in before I did something about all the ramifications. It was,
so you dove
okay,
in.
The opportunity is here, and I tell this too to young women. Mm-hmm. Be prepared. When the door opens, be prepared to walk through it so that you're always ready for what as ready as you can be.
I was going to say, without knowing necessarily what's on the other side of the door.
And sometimes that's good.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is New Jersey State Senator Loretta Weinberg, who is currently the Majority Leader of the State Senate. You know, Loretta, an article that I read written about you said, Loretta Weinberg might look like a kindly grandmother, and you are, but warns that nobody should underestimate her, that she bares her teeth and is one of the most influential players in New Jersey politics. Are you proud?
I think in order to move ahead in what is still predominantly a male world, at least in New Jersey.
Well, come on,
politics,
everywhere.
Mostly everywhere. You have to be ready to take advantage and to play hardball every so often. I know what I believe in. I know what my passion is, and I know what my commitment is.
And you've been elected numerous times because of those passions and commitments.
Hopefully that is true. So it's understanding what those goals are. And sometimes along the way, I have to compromise things. And you talked about the Indoor Clean Air Act. We had to compromise to allow Atlantic City casinos, the only indoor place where you're still allowed to smoke in New Jersey, in order to garner enough votes. So there was, do I like it that they can vote, that they can still smoke in casinos? No. I don't even like walking through for that reason. However, I had to balance that against the 99% of the rest of the state. You talked about the issues of the lesbian and gay legislation that we finally passed in New Jersey. It started out with a very small domestic partnership bill that really only affected state employees, and any local employees, cities, municipalities had to opt in. It was a very small step, but it was a beginning. And you have to learn in a position like this, a little patience, a lot of discipline, keeping your eye on what the goal is, and then willing sometimes to take small steps, although I find the older I am, the less patient I've become.
I would think, yeah, sure.
So there are some big issues out there that I want to address over the next couple of years of my term as the Senate Majority Leader. But it takes a whole combination of being strong in what you believe in, being patient, and being disciplined.
Is there a feeling of impotence in terms of being a politician? Don't you think, I mean, and this is such a cliche already, what's going on in Washington with the gridlock and we can't get anything done and everybody's got their own agenda. there's sometimes I just look, and yes, you've done so much stuff, and it's wonderful, but I think to myself, why would anybody want to get into this field today?
Well, there is a certain amount of that, but you know what? You can still make some big changes by just standing strong. So I sometimes try not to keep my eye on the big picture, as I say, because then I'd really give it up.
Sure.
But only on the steps that I know I can take, along with others. Obviously, you don't do anything alone in the legislature. And I happen to have a really good president of the Senate who has been very supportive of me. As the majority leader. And
does that mean? What does a Senate majority leader really do?
Okay, the president of the Senate sets the agenda. Nothing can get posted for a vote at either the committee level or before the full Senate without leadership signing off. First the Senate president, then the majority leader.
So we both have to agree.
Yeah, we are. Well, we don't both have to agree, but that's the way it's run.
Okay.
You could have a Senate president that doesn't include the majority leader, but in truth, it's usually run this way. As the majority leader, it's up to me to deal with our caucus. I'm a Democrat. We have 24 Democrats out of 40 in the
state
Senate.
So we're the majority, obviously. Yes.
So we have
Hence
the majority.
The title. Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes seeking votes from the other side of the aisle for whatever reason. So it's a real leadership team, and it's not a democracy on the floor of the legislature. You can't just raise your hand and say, I want to discuss something else. It doesn't run like that, obviously. So it's a combination of deciding what's important, how you keep your caucus happy, as well as keeping the goals of the legislature moving forward, and what are the important things that we should be addressing, whether it's infrastructure, roads, bridges, tunnels, et cetera.
What is that like when there's agreement in both houses on procuring money for infrastructure, let's say, improving roads, and it may get vetoed by the governor?
It's very frustrating.
That's Miss B, where the impotence comes in, right?
New Jersey has the strongest office of governor constitutionally of any state in the nation.
Strongest as in most powerful?
Strongest as in most powerful.
So what does that mean?
Constitutionally. The governor can rewrite almost anything we do with what is called a conditional veto. Much more power in the state than the president has nationally in terms of the legislative process. The governor can line item veto something, can stop certain appropriations. We might vote X number of dollars for something in a budget and come toward the end of the year. If the money hasn't all been spent, he can transfer it unilaterally. So they have a lot of power as governor. Vetoing a bill means you need 27 votes in the Senate, and I think it's 54 in the Assembly, to override a veto.
Right.
So we do not, the majority party does not have what they call veto-proof majorities in either house. We have some difficulties, for instance, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which runs all the tunnels and bridges in the metropolitan area, has a budget bigger than 26 states in the nation.
Oh, my God, one agency.
The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. They run the ports in Port Elizabeth. They run the George Washington Bridge, the Lincoln Tunnel, all of these roads and bridges. The only way you can pass legislation that affects the Port Authority is both New York and New Jersey have to pass exactly the same legislation. And we did that to modernize the Port Authority, create more transparency, more accountability on how the money was being spent so that we weren't dealing with deteriorating bus terminals that 240,000 people travel in and out of each day. Both governors vetoed that legislation. Both Governor New York, Governor Cuomo on a bipartisan basis, Governor Christie, Christmas week a year ago. And we have spent the last year trying to rework this legislation with New York legislators. So remember, it's got to go through two houses, Senate and Assembly in New Jersey, two houses in New York, and then hopefully we'll get the governors to sign it this time.
You wonder if that'll happen in your lifetime.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Do you think there is a bigger egomaniac than a politician?
Well, you need a pretty strong ego. It's a little bit like Hollywood. You need a pretty strong ego
to... You have to be full of yourself?
I don't know about full of yourself. I mean, I know a lot of politicians who are not full of themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think we all have pretty strong egos. Mm-hmm. You need that in order to stand up in front of a group and even think in your head you might be able to convince them to vote for you or to vote for a particular issue that you're interested in. If you... You know, if you're kind of a little afraid of all that sort of thing, if you don't have enough strong ego, confidence, whatever words you want to use, then you're not going to be successful here. Being full of yourself is something very different. I feel personally I am very grounded, mostly because of my family and because of the good friends I've had over the years.
All of a sudden, somebody's not just, you know, sucking up to you at it.
I mean, they couldn't care less than unless... I don't know, unless they want to find out whether I can get them a ticket to a Giant game or something. But right. Other than that, they couldn't care less. So having the friends you had before you were, quote, a big wheel, end quote, and certainly your family. I mean, my grandchildren who are 10 and 12 years old, they every so often will kid around, call me Senator Grammy. But generally speaking, they're... just happy that I'll take them to a movie and let them buy candy.
Eat the popcorn.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is State Senator Loretta Weinberg, Senate Majority Leader in New Jersey. What are your long and short-term goals and your top priorities? In this day and age, how do they differ from when you first started out?
My priorities haven't differed. It's always been about families, about government transparency and accountability. Mm-hmm. I believe that everything I do in my public life should be public. Huh. And that's one of my greatest frustrations, particularly local public officials, that is municipalities, people on local councils and so on. You mention public records or open public meetings, and they get apoplectic. So that is one of my long-range goals that I haven't always succeeded. I've been trying to bring some of these laws up into the 21st century. Some of the open public records accountability laws were written before we even had the word internet.
Hmm.
So that has been a source of frustration. But issues around women's reproductive rights, constant battle.
Oh, boy.
Constant vigilance. Thankfully, in New Jersey, even though we have a so-called pro-life governor, the legislature is not backtracking on any Roe v. Wade type issues. But we have lost money for access to women's health, mostly to Planned Parenthood. Right here in New Jersey, because the governor, again, has vetoed that money out of the budget, and we have never had enough votes to override that veto. So it takes constant vigilance here in terms, we all know what's going on nationally, but in terms of protecting New Jersey women's right to choose.
Don't you want to scream sometime and just sort of say, for crying out loud. I mean, can we just sort of move on? And there's a part of me, I know this is very simplistic. If you don't want to have an abortion, if you don't believe in abortion, don't have an abortion. If you don't believe in gay marriage, don't get gay married. And leave me the hell alone. I get it.
You summed up, Sandy. You don't know how often I've said that. Let me point out one particular experience. I was appearing in the other house before the Assembly Budget Committee on the women's health issue, trying to get this $7.5 million reinstated. And somebody from Planned Parenthood was there and gave testimony that when something like, we helped avoid 4,000 unplanned pregnancies. And there was a young man on the Assembly Budget Committee who said, I am offended by that. Those are children who should have been born. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the new millennium.
Oh, my goodness.
I am sitting here as old as I am.
Yeah.
And I'm still having a discussion on access to birth control.
Isn't that insane? I don't understand how you didn't blow up.
Well, I
or
almost
did. You blow
did.
Up?
There was it's a good thing there was a large space between the table where I was
did
sitting.
Did you just want to go for him?
And huh? I did. I said, well, I happen to be offended at what you just said. The idea that there were 4,000 women who got birth control and therefore avoided getting pregnant, and you're offended? This is mind-blowing that in this day and age, we had a young man who was actually elected to the state legislature who could sit there with impunity and make a comment like that. I get mad now thinking about it. So,
where do you see women going? There are not a lot of you in politics.
No, but many more than there were,
all
certainly.
Right. And so, but is there safety in numbers here?
Yeah, yes, and a possibility that we could elect a woman president.
Yes,
or that
yes.
we've got a very viable female candidate for president.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe in my lifetime I've seen the first African-American president. Maybe I will now see the first woman president.
Mm-hmm.
So we've made great strides, not nearly enough. We're 51% of the population.
I think it's more now.
Maybe more.
Uh-huh.
We're many more heads of household than
but
we used to
be. But we're still not
be.
Getting paid the same as men for the same work. I mean, you know, Loretta, what are you going to do about that?
I'm working on a new pay equity bill. Matter of fact, California just passed an excellent pay equity bill that was signed by their governor, Jerry Brown.
Right.
Who, and I didn't even know that this existed, who signed it at the Rosie the Riveter Museum, which is up near San Francisco someplace, which I thought was pretty appropriate.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a very good bill, and I have had a bill in on pay equity. We're looking at the California bill to see what we could pick apart from that. And that's one of my goals for this next 2 years.
Not for nothing. If that doesn't pass or work, you know, you just sort of throw your hands up in disgust. I mean, stop already.
Well, you know, and I'm assuming most of your listeners know, that the only way that women are going to move ahead is if they can control their own reproductive lives
mm-hmm.
of when they're going to have children, if they're going to have children. Because if that's taken away from them, then it's going to be hard to achieve in any other area of life. So I think we've made great strides, but it takes vigilance constantly. And there are many groups, national as well as statewide, that help women get involved in politics. It's a national group called Emerge, which tries to find Democratic women to run for office. There's Emily's List, which is the national fundraising for pro-choice women. There used to be a pro-choice Republican women's group that raised money, which seems to have gone by the wayside. So there are a lot of places out there, Center for American Women in Politics, which is the national repository on everything about women in politics. Happens to be located at Rutgers University.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Anybody can go on to that Center for American Women in Politics webpage and find out almost anything and everything they want to know about women in politics and issues.
We don't have much time left, and I just wanted to end. Can we end on an optimistic note?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the White House, through President Obama, we have a lot of interchange now between progressive state legislators and the White House, because they feel that the laboratories for change and the new kind of pay equity, earned sick leave mm-hmm. for people who work at McDonald's, things of that nature, are only coming through the states, not federally. That's where the change will take place. And I am very encouraged that there is this interchange, and I hope whenever the new president comes in a year or so from now, or 18 months from now, that will continue, that kind of interchange between the states and the executive branch.
Well, I just want to say the world needs more Loretta Weinbergs, and I can't thank you enough for having this conversation with me. It was terrific, and you are terrific.
Thank you very much, Sandy. You're not so bad yourself.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women, and if you have a comment that you would like to make or a guest you want to share, visit our website at sandyclineshow.com.